Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the City Council meeting for Tuesday, April 5th, 2016. The time right now is 7:04 p.m. Ms. Smith, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Cutback, Rasmussen, Davis, Campbell, and Scarborough.
And we're just checking to see if Councilmember Camp had indicated he'd be absent this evening. So maybe he's running a little bit late. All right. So Councilmember Rasmussen, will you lead us in the pledge? Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, without objection, we're going to move the executive session, which is labeled as pricing of property, to follow comments from citizens. The next item that we have on our agenda then will be announcements and presentations. This is a presentation from Chief Silva from Fire District Number 3 about the Fire District merger. Chief Silva.
Hey, thanks for having us. This is Chief Gary Meek, the Fire Chief of Fire District 7. We're here tonight to talk about the process we're going through to merge Fire District 3 and the Fire District 7. So just kind of talk a little bit about Fire District 3, and we provide, you know, life and safety to the citizens of the City of Monroe and the Fire District around it. We respond to an average of 3,400 calls. 68% of our calls are emergency medical type calls. We're a combination, mostly career, but we have volunteer part-time employees. This is kind of a map of our district, of District 3. We have two fire stations, and as you can see, we cover the City of Monroe and then the unincorporated area, which is about 55 square miles, and we serve about 30,000 citizens. So what we do is we do fire suppression, prevention. We respond on both advanced life support type calls, where we have paramedics, basic life support calls. We transport patients to the hospital. We do the whole gamut of EMS. We respond on motor vehicle collisions. Technical rescue, which includes road rescue, trench, high-low angle, confined space rescue. Hazardous materials responses. And provide public education. And we do have Heather Chadwick, who's our PIO public safety educator back there. I'd like to introduce Heather.
You've probably seen her name a lot in the newspaper and stuff, and it's always nice to put a face to that.
So as you can see here, in 2015, we responded to 3,800 calls. You can see our call volume has gone up about 3% on the average, so demands for service. One thing about that's unique to Monroe is our mutual aid is probably 10, 15 minutes away. We don't have the city borders right next to us. And for some reason, our calls have come in clumps. It'd be nice if people could call me in the morning and I could schedule, you know, the calls. Okay, you're at 8 and you're at 10, but we seem to run three calls at one time. Police our services. Our revenues, for 2016, almost $9 million in revenues. As you can see, a majority of our revenues, 84%, come from property taxes. And I'll kind of point out why that's important later on. So just the different types of revenues that we have coming in. Our expenses, 2016, our expenses are $8.8 million, almost $8.9 million for 2016. 71.6% of our expenses go to fire and EMS suppression. there's a different list that we have. As we all know, during the last recession, Kenny hit the fire district later in the city. About 2010-11, our property values started. And it's pointed out 84% of our revenues came in from property values. And as they dropped, they reached their statutory limit. And then we started to lose money. And so then that was less money that we had to provide services with. So in 2012, we went out to the voters and asked to raise the maintenance and operation levy and raised our taxes 94 cents per thousand of assessed valuation so we didn't lay anybody off. And that was to maintain the current level of service. We, fortunately, in the last couple of years, we're going back. We're still not back to where we were in 2009 for our assessed values. So then we are looking at ways to be more efficient. You know, so we've started working with District 7 and different things. We have a regional shop with them. You know, so we're trying to do more things that do economies of scale. District 7 is a neighboring fire district. They cover Clearview and Malby area. They contract with the city of Mill Creek. They have six fire stations, I think 93 career firefighters. So, as I said, we started doing things when we've had a regional shop with Fire District 7 since 92. We launched a community resource paramedic. This is an individual that we actually share this with Lake Stevens Fire Department, and this is an advocate for patients. This individual goes out to our high volume patients that we see a lot. You know, if guys go on a call and they see that maybe somebody needs a little help, they shouldn't be living on their own. This is a resource that we can notify this individual that will go in, meet with the patient, their family members, and look for the resources to provide better service rather than the catch 22 of us hauling them to the hospital, the nurse yelling at us, why are you bringing them here? Nothing we can do. They go home, we haul them to the hospital. So this has been programmed nationwide. It's very successful. We're proud of this program. You should have brought that letter to you guys.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the letter?
Well, actually, it was a recent letter we received from a citizen from Monroe that our community resource medic has been working with over the last 6 months or so. She ended up passing away, but the family wrote a letter thanking for everything that he did and referred to him as a guardian angel in the process. Although in the final outcome, it was what it was. They felt that her dignity and the help that he provided to her in those last few months was just phenomenal. So we received letters like that from the people that are associated with him. His name is Scott Cope. And in our department, if we kind of, in our collaborative departments, it's kind of a standing joke. If you need a little bit of motivation or inspiration, you just get within about 10 feet of that guy. Because he's full of energy and he just loves to help people. So just another success story. But he's helped several people in Monroe, Lake Stevens, and up in the Clearview area too.
So just a resource we want everybody to be aware of. So if you know somebody, let us know. You can send that resource out. Then we started brainstorming in the downturn of the economy. We had a secretary that retired, but somebody that did all our mapping or GIS work promoted up to do a different job. And we had to do mapping. Chief Meek had issues, you know, trying to get somebody to do mapping. So this one brainstormed and said, hey, I got a person that does the job your person does. But that person do both jobs, and then the GIS person can do mapping. So we did that. And at that point, we said, you know, why are we not just talking merge? So effective January 1st, we convinced our commissioners. And I want to point out that we do have Commissioner Leslie Wells here. You want to wave, Leslie? And they supported our venture, and we functionally consolidated our administration. And so we now have the executive staff down here at Station 31. We've moved training EMS and fire prevention divisions up to 71 on 180th and Highway 9. We've moved their HR and their financial officer down to the headquarters here. And so we're practicing. We're seeing how it works. The efficiencies have been excellent. It's like if you were building two fire departments to later on merge them, it's like we put our eggs in different baskets so that we can blend well together. So we have a fire prevention division. They gain a fire marshal, a fire inspector. And we gain a financial officer, an HR director, and a PIO, public safety educator. And then together we get resources where we can have an assistant chief that focuses on operations, and then another one that focuses on support services. Where before, we each had, you know, these same individuals doing both, you know, going to the same meeting, so the efficiencies just speak for themselves. So our next process is to merge the departments. We have gone through our CEPA process. We filed with the Boundary Review Board. We got our notice of intent. The 45-day period's open. It closes May 11th. Go on to our commissioner meetings. We've jointly combined our commissioner meetings. We hold the second Thursday of every month at 7 p.m. We hold it here at Station 31. And then the fourth Thursday is up at Station 71. But for the month of April, we're having both meetings here at Monroe because we're going to have public meetings for input on the merger process. And then with the goal that the commissioners will approve a resolution to place this on the August 2nd ballot. So this is a map of what it would look like combined. So they come with six fire stations that are staffed. We come with two. It's going to give us eight staffed stations. The one thing I will say is you see a 74 and a new 75. Then eventually when the new 75 is completed, or in the process going out to bid for it, 74 will not be staffed, and 75, which is closer to 522 and Fells Road, which is quicker access into Monroe, will be the station. So 74 won't be staffed. Any questions? Gary, any comments here?
No, I think the new 75 we've placed that strategically for responses in the southeast corner of Fire District 7 as it used to exist, but it also is geared into, I know Monroe's actively involved in the improvements along the 522 corridor. We've been concerned about that for a long time on that also. We get gridlocked on that thing if there's an accident on 522 either direction in rush hour traffic. If it's in the morning, Monroe can't get to those calls because of the traffic backup all the way down into the Monroe Main Street 164th exit. And if it's in the evening time, we have trouble getting off of the Echo Lake Road into that area. So that's just another area that when you take away the boundaries and don't worry about whose line you're on, that we can both provide coverage because Monroe can come up from the east side and help us with westbound traffic in the evening and vice versa for us in the morning. I think collaboratively, I'm hoping that we'll have some strong say in those improvements as they move forward.
Thank you. Before you continue, Councilmember Scarborough has a question.
74 up by Malmby Elementary?
Yes.
Okay, and where will 75 be if it's down closer to 522?
It's sitting right near the intersection of Fales Road and SR 522.
There's one there now or will be built?
Will be built.
Okay.
Currently, we actually had a building that sat just a little bit south of that. During we went through some identical downturn in the economy. Over a 3.5-year period, we lost over $12 million out of our operating budget. We did some incentivized retirements. We didn't lay anybody off and ended up closing that station, the old Station 5. It was strategically, should not have been put there to begin with, and it was running 0.3 calls a day. At an expense of about $1.6 million a year. So we went through a study with the county, with their planning department, determined that new location could serve all of the 74 and 75 area more than adequately, keep up our performance standards for response times to those areas, and service the call volume that it provides. So it was a cost-saving effort.
So I mentioned some of these, but you know, the improvements that we have again are the accounting, human resources, public education information. District 7 gets the Fire Prevention Division, Fire Marshal, and then us merging the other things, such as our Ops Chief and our Support Services Chiefs, and giving us more additional resources to manage large-scale events. You know, the merger will reduce bureaucracy and the cost of running two organizations, one labor agreement. You know, our unions joined together over a year ago, I believe it was. So they work under one, they have two labor group or labor contracts, but they have one union leadership. We do have President Michael McConnell that's here. The union supports this, administration supports this, and the commissioners as a whole support this.
Before you continue, Chief, Councilmember Hanford had a question.
Yes, thanks, Chief. Do you know practically would it be called one, like under the name of one Mike Renner, Monroe Fire District, and then it's like the Fire District. So would it just be called something specific, or do you know that yet?
We've looked into that. And so we had a naming, a branding contest to come up with names. And everybody put a lot of good creative names in, but nothing really stuck. We had a hard time narrowing it down. You know, we're hoping this gets bigger. There'd be a chance that maybe Woodinville comes in. So we call it Snohomish County something, and or King County. And so I think in the short term, we haven't decided this, but in my opinion, we stay with Fire District 7. And then, you know, if we move, maybe something will come to us. At that point, you know, we still want to, you know, keep our character for each area, our identity. So we'll have a Monroe Station, you know, and you see that, like in Seattle, you have, you know, the Ballard, and you have the Capitol Hill, and, you know, so you put that on the engines in the station, you have your Monroe, you have your Wagner Hill, you have your Clearview, you know, the different stations. So we want to keep that, you know, identity that we have. We don't want to lose that anywhere. So that's been kind of our biggest problem, is trying to come up with that. So.
Thanks. Legally, the District 3 is proposing to merge into District 7, so legally it will become District 7. If we rename it something different down the road, it'll be something that kind of fits the community that we're, the new community that we're serving. That's our goal.
Okay, thank you.
And I said, you know, we're going for the August 2nd primary election for this, approved by the voters. We right now, District 3 is paying $229,000, but with assessed values going up, it will decrease the amount of pay. So we're anticipating it'll be $210,000, but if we merge into District 7, it'll be $1.90, around $1.98. Those are projected because, you know, the assessed values affect that. And then District 7's property taxes don't change at all. They stay the same.
Okay. Councilmember Cutback.
Chief Silva, you talked about that the costs go down for efficiencies. Do you have a dollar amount? What you guys are saving on an annual
basis? We don't have a specific one. We spent countless hours, and I showed you our forecasting model here once that Bill Cushman helped us put together. We put a mammoth one together as a merger, and it included us going into them, and showed every employee, every expense, every revenue, property taxes. It went through everything, and we look out 7 years, and we show that it can sustain with very conservative growth. And so we vetted the numbers. We've looked at, you know, county assessed values, growth, everything else. So while we don't have that number in the forecasting model, it shows that it's very viable.
Please continue.
So, any questions?
Councilor, are there any other questions? Was there one back there? Okay. Chiefs, thank you very much for coming this evening.
Thank you.
And for your presentation.
Thank you.
Mayor, do we have two math recess rooms?
Yes. We're going to do so. Before you do that, please let the record show that Councilmember Camp arrived at 7:11 this evening, and we will take a 2-minute recess. So we will be back in session at we'll call it 7:25 on the clock back there. So that's about 4 minutes. Thank you. Okay, we're back in session. The next item on the agenda this evening is announcements and, I'm sorry, we've already done that, is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. We do have a sign-in sheet, and public comment is limited to 5 minutes per speaker. The first person that we have who signed up to speak is Barry Burnell.
Yes.
Mr. Burnell, please come forward and state your name and address for the record. Thank you, sir.
Yes, my name is Barry Burnell. My issue is I moved here 10 years ago over the Friars at the end of Blackboard. At the time when we moved there, I loved the property. I loved the view it had at the drive going into Black Horse, etc. There was a canal there. Apparently, the survey of the person's property next door was laid out wrong 18 years ago. So they moved his property line to the center of the canal. So what they've done is they filled in the canal, ran under water underground. And eventually he's going to move his fence. But I've been there 10 years. All of a sudden people show up and they drop in 5 bollards, 38 feet from my front door. I got photos here, folks. Me and my wife were so terribly unhappy with this. It looks like a fix to a problem that never existed. I've been there 10 years. It's a city, easement. And it's not a walkway. Kids occasionally go, coming home from school, pass through. I have maintained that property, the city, just because I don't want to see weeds. So I have a yard service crew green. They come in, they spray it all so I don't have dandelions and all that stuff. I maintain it and cut it and everything. I don't use it, I don't put anything on it. What I want is, well, I want my view back. I have a perfectly sound solution for a problem that does not exist. I want to be able to see around Black Forest. I want that beautiful view back. If you could take these bollards that don't serve any purpose anyway, if you could just move them back in the easement to the end of my property and drop them in there, I'll have my view, your situation, for a problem that doesn't exist, will be solved. I know I only have 5 minutes. I understand. But I think it's important that you folks see what I see 38 feet from my house now. This is when I step directly outside of my lawn, outside of my house. I see this. It's a commercial application for a situation that there was never a problem there. There was no problem to exist. Now, this distance is only 38 feet. I know it's not a wide angle, but it's only 38 feet from the front of my door. It's just not necessary. There's never, ever been a car that's come across that piece of property, your easement. I've never put anything on there. But I'm just begging you to please do something with those bollards. Just pull them back to the end of my property. It'll be the same thing, and then I can get my deed back. That's what I'm here for, folks. It's just that simple. I got it in writing if you'd like it. I've got the pictures if you'd like it. It's not as big a matter as you just had on the board, I realize. But I'm very upset about it, and I'm hoping you folks can do something. I have been to Public Works. I got no notice. They just come out and started drilling holes and pumping cement, dropping these bollards in. They're ugly as can be. A big thing with a chain that says City of Monroe Property. I'm not going to steal it, I promise. If you can just remove the bollards so I can get my view back, I would be so happy. And that's why I'm here.
Thank you very much. Staff will...
Can we see that?
The pictures?
Yeah. I missed one of them.
Yeah,
just pass one.
Would you be willing to leave the photos here for me?
I'm really pleased. I'd like to leave everything.
Okay, great. We'll go ahead.
And then will somebody call me, notify me, tell me yes or no or something eventually? I mean, my wife is... And furthermore, I think it's going to alter my abilities to... I would personally, folks, I never would have bought this piece of property if I had these bollards in there. I swear to you. This view that we had going up around Black Horse was what we wanted to see. And now, we didn't mind the ditch, but now with these bollards right in our face, I'm just...
Okay. Thank you. Staff will update council either later this evening or next week, and somebody will be back in touch with you.
I very much appreciate it. Thank you, folks.
Thank you. All right, is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak to the city council on any issue related to the city of Monroe this evening? Okay, seeing none, we now have a need for an executive session. The executive session is on pricing of property, W42301101C, for approximately 5 minutes. We will have action to proceed after that, as we still have the rest of the agenda before us. So we will be on executive session for 5 minutes, and we will leave the room so that you can stay in this room. Thank you. Liz, when you're ready, let me know. All right, we're back in session. The next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Council? Councilmember Hanford.
I will move to approve the consent agenda as listed.
Second.
Okay, the first from Councilmember Hanford. A second was at Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion to approve the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is unfinished business. This is unfinished business item number 1, AB 16041, discussion fireworks regulations. And Chief Quinzer, I believe you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Started out with on July 7th, there was a request by several council members to put this item on the extended agenda on August 16th. Information was relayed to the council in reference to fireworks. And what we were going to do is monitor, if I remember correctly, the concern from the council was to come up with some type of emergency ordinance that would allow a temporary ban of fireworks during extremely dry seasons. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. So in the 2016 legislative session, there was a bill that was brought in front of the House, and it died in the House Rules Committee, so it didn't go any further than that, which would allow an emergency ban on fireworks without having to wait the year, because if you enact something right now, it will not occur until, I believe, July of 2017. So that's where we are right now. You've got in your packet, you've got all the regulations that are currently in place, plus there's a letter from one citizen to the council members referenced the sale of fireworks.
Thank you. Chief Silva, our agenda bill says that you will be present tonight and be available to present information on fireworks-related calls over the last couple of years. Would you be able to share some of that information this evening? Or?
I will defer that to the fire marshal.
Okay. Thank you.
And I can answer that briefly and just let you know that from a fire department perspective, it's mostly a nuisance issue and therefore a law enforcement issue. And you have a handout I'll pass out to you that illustrates the fires that we've experienced over the last 10 years. Not only just the fires within the city of Monroe, but also just staff and citizens and others. But not only the fires in the city of Monroe, but also the unincorporated areas that we serve and mutual aid departments. And just in short summary, what this shows is that, yeah, we've had a couple large fire losses in the south part of old downtown Monroe is where those have occurred. And coincidentally, they occurred during the hot 80-plus degree weather that we experience sometimes in the summer. And you can look at the total number of fires in the city this last year. Really was the most prominent in the last 10 years. We had 9 fires in the city. They aren't necessarily structural fires, but those are fires to which we responded in the city. A lot of vegetation fires, a lot of bushes catch on fire. The one thing I would say looking at these incidents is that the most common denominator is that most of these fires, the ones that we can identify with the true cause of which firework caused the fire, is aerial devices. So those could include bottle rockets or mortars. Bottle rockets, of course, are illegal under state law. Mortars are not, as long as they're under the right diameter. So aerial devices is obviously a problem for us in this community, but I would say just if you're looking at the total number of fires, quite low. Any fire is probably unacceptable. I think in years past when we've come to council to discuss fireworks, council has historically not been in favor of a complete ban. We do have a restriction in the city of Monroe that limits the sale and discharge of fireworks to a shorter number of days. One of those restrictions is you cannot sell fireworks on July 5th, which makes perfect sense, and for whatever reason, state law says you can sell them on July 5th, even though you can't discharge them again until either the New Year's holiday or the following year holiday. Some of the recommendations that we've seen, both from council, or comments to council from citizens in the past year and years prior, is to limit the dates of sale. Like beginning, I think in a letter was suggested that don't start selling until July 1st. And that does make perfect sense in a lot of different reasons, not only for the people that are out there to make those sales. A lot of them are volunteers or doing volunteer fundraising. But also it really is a hardship on fire department staff because we're out there inspecting each one of these dams every day. Other things I would recommend if you are interested in pursuing a prohibition due to extreme fire dangers within the city or making that code change locally to allow a prohibition to be in place would be, again, consideration and restriction of aerial fireworks. In the city of Auburn, in fact, you drive into the city limits and there's a great sign that says if it goes up or blows up in the city of Auburn, it's illegal. Other cities, of course, in our area have complete bans. A lot of the fireworks vendors and wholesalers like to do business in the city of Monroe because they can sell here and people can discharge here. The rules in the unincorporated county are a little bit different than the city. As far as the discharge goes, however, they can only discharge on July 4th. So, there is also a small error in the municipal code that will have to be amended, and that can be amended during the next code revision cycle, which will probably happen in June this year. Doesn't really have any net effect on fireworks hazards or dangers that we experience locally, but there are some amendments that have to be made regardless. Any questions about either the handout or anything I've tried to summarize for you?
Thank you. I do have a couple lights. I don't know if they're for you or for Chief Solit.
Sure.
Councilmember Scarborough.
This speaks to the number of fires. How about the number of personal injuries caused by fireworks?
So we've only logged locally in the last 10 years one injury, and it was actually a firefighter injury, and it was caused by aerial fireworks landing on firefighters. That was in 2013, I believe. Also, the hospital that same year, coincidentally, they had four fireworks injuries that year. But you just don't see the fireworks injuries that you hear about or see on television. They're not. But in the last 10 years, we just have one document.
Thank you. Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I'm not sure if you can answer this question. It might be one of the many chiefs we have here tonight. Is there a difference, or is there the ability to put a restriction versus a ban? I know we have a one-year waiting period to put a ban on fireworks, but like you're saying, if it's extremely hot winter or hot summer, and we want to be able to restrict just bottle rockets that year, can we do that, or no?
You still have to wait the year to amend.
It's, so either a restriction or a ban would have to wait for a year. Okay, I just want to check on that, and. Monroe's laws concerning fireworks are different than the county, is that correct?
Yes.
We have a longer period of time to sell? Or are there other differences? That's something
I'm not sure about.
We have a shorter
sale, but the discharge is, in the county is limited.
Okay. It's further.
I think we are too, actually. They do not allow discharge on or sales on New Year's Eve where we do for that holiday.
Okay.
But yeah, discharge is the same in the county and the city for July 4th.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other customer comments?
So in some of the sample ordinances I saw where they have the right to maybe restrict or if there's a serious drought, they have the fire marshal kind of making that decision. Is that something if we were to look at amending our ordinance to allow for a ban during certain times or a restriction, would you recommend that we have the fire marshal look at that, or is...
Well, you have the fire marshal or fire chief, and I can tell you, whichever designated authority it is, it will be made with consideration of everybody's comments,
right.
Councils included.
Right.
So, for instance, the one that you see from Douglas County, they had a fire, Sleepy Hollow fire started June 28th. Their sales of fireworks were not, in Douglas County, they're restricted to not begin until July 1st. And so they had a period of time there between June 28th and July 1st to contemplate this complete, I think they call it a fire safety prohibition due to extreme fire danger. So they had a 2 to 3 day period which they contemplated. It's not just so easy just to say, okay, we're gonna ban it because we have severe fire danger. The issues involved are that we have we've issued retail fireworks permits to people, and so we have fireworks in our community. They're sitting in these wooden stands or tents. And if we've already issued the permit, that means we've collected the fee, they've obtained their required permits, business licenses, etc. And the whole concept of instituting a ban because of fire safety really needs to take into account all those vendors and what do we do with the fireworks, or what happens if they've already started selling and now we institute a ban, and then we've got fireworks out there that people have legally purchased but now cannot legally discharge. So if that's something council considers, I would also recommend that you consider moving the date of sale up a little bit closer to July 4th, like the July 1st date that was recommended.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chief Klinzer.
From this last year, from 2015, July 28th to July 5th, we had 51 incidents where we were called for fireworks type. That's about the average per year that we have. We also, when you're looking at enforcement, this last year I know that we had like four major traffic accidents during the 4th of July, on 4th of July during the period the fireworks were going off too. So as far as trying to enforce a fireworks ban at the same time and doing our regular job, it would be somewhat difficult. So, that's something that we need to keep in mind. Also, the fireworks that are causing the damage, the high aerial fireworks are illegal anyway. And so you can pass all the regulations and rules you want, but if you can't enforce it, it doesn't really mean much. And I'm just throwing that out there. We do our best. But our best certainly would not eliminate all the illegal fireworks that would be going on. So.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. As you read there in the notes, I had supported Councilmember Cutback in bringing this forward for research and gaining more knowledge. And based on everything that we've heard and the research that's been done, I don't see a need to put a ban on fireworks or to try to put us in a position as a city to where we can make a call, the week of, okay, are we going to have fireworks or not? I don't think that it's worth us doing. As the chief said, we could put an outright ban on, and they're going to go off one way or another. So Looking at these temperatures, last year was an extremely high year, but when you look at all the other temperatures, and this confirms that my memory still works, that traditionally the summer starts like on the 5th of July mm-hmm. around here. Last year it didn't, but for the most part that's the case. So those are my thoughts. I would to supporting moving the date of sale to July 1st, 1st through the 4th, for the fact that that may help with the nonprofits that are wanting to get a window that's more consolidated. And I don't think we're infringing on too many rights by changing the date by 4 days or whatever it is. But those are my thoughts for now. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. I agree with Councilmember Hanford. I remember back in my earlier days, I believe the state of Washington had a restriction of you could get sparklers and pinwheels, and it's amazing what kind of explosive devices you can build with sparklers and pinwheels. I think enforcement would be a mess, and as the chief pretty much explained to me, that enforcing the traffic issues we have in town and trying to maintain a ban on fireworks would be impossible. I do like the idea of having a shortened window. I think that would be very good. If there was a way, if I don't know if any way that would be possible to be able to take into account weather issues, and if we have another 100-degree July 4th, it would make sense to be able to put a restriction on it. But if we can't do it, then, like I said, I would like to see the restricted window and take what measures we can to make it as safe as we can for everybody. And whatever restrictions or whatever enforcement we can for the really ridiculously illegal fireworks that are being launched in the city would probably be our best options. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Chief Silva, how do the firefighters feel about that? Chief Meek, Chief Silva.
I don't know if I can answer that. I don't know.
Chief Silva, I'm sorry, can you come up to the microphone?
The fire representatives here. What is?
We know it's a political issue, and it's a right as an American citizen, and you know, it's a tough decision to ban them and to enforce them. You mentioned the firefighters. I couldn't say what the firefighters as a whole want. I never hold them for that.
Okay.
But you know, I think safety is our utmost concern. I do support an ability to be able to say, hey, it's 100 degrees, and we should be able to have a ban. At least makes all of us look good to say, hey, it's too hot. We want to ban them. If other people, you know, disobey the law, then he takes the heat off of us and puts it on them. So, you know, we know that banning fireworks is very sensitive to people, but I do support moving forward with being able to do it in critical times.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further?
Gary, have anything to add?
Probably have to echo a little bit of everything that's been this evening. We have a similar request to the fire district in the unincorporated areas that cover Malby, Clearview, Cathcart, where Fire District 7 currently serves. And we had the fortunate ability to have representatives of the deputies, the Shitsonis County Sheriff's Office there also. The enforcement of it isn't the types of fireworks that you're allowing to be sold in the city and it's being discharged in the city, although you can take sparklers and make some very nice explosive devices out of them, but people are going to find a creative way to do that anyway. The problem is the illegal stuff. So, you know, if you want to ask the question of me of what the firefighters think, that I think it's really a mixed bag. Some of them think that that's their, you know, they're given right as a U.S. citizen. Others don't like the carnage that can come from it. But like District 3, District 7 experienced really low call experience. It's not much different than what you're seeing here.
Thanks.
So the legal stuff isn't really your big concern. It's the illegal stuff, and that's a whole different game.
Thank you. Fire Marshal, did you have anything to add to that?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Anything further? All right. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Yeah. Moving the date to have a shorter window, I think, is a huge first step. I guess I just look at this and, and even looking back at all this and thinking, 10 years down the road, and, the fact that we're having a discussion today, kind of makes me think, wouldn't it be nice that things that we are having a discussion today be able to put steps in a place that we have options down the road? And, and that's the reason for this discussion today, is that we're knowing that what we decide today won't happen until a year from now. And, so if we can, if there's anything that we can do, and I think I've said this before when we've briefly talked about this, that, if we can at least put options in place to allow us to be a little more flexible, we don't have to use those options, but it is nice to have those options down the road instead of being limited the way we are now. I completely understand it's tough to enforce. It's the illegal fireworks that are the problems. I get all that, and I agree with all that. I truly do, but I'm also one that I like to have options, and if we can put options in play when we've got the opportunity, I don't see a reason why not. That's my thought.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. So when I asked to bring this forward, I was definitely not in favor of an outright ban. How the issue came up, it really was deciding if we wanted to have the flexibility in case of an emergency to look at that and put a restriction depending on weather, the drought, all of that. So in kind of looking at this, I still agree that not having outright ban, I'm not in favor of that. I am in favor of giving us more flexibility, possibly in writing something in the ordinance where in the case of an emergency, and hearing from the fire marshal, it is not a quick, they're going to make a decision. It really is taking into account the vendors, the permits that have been sold. So it wouldn't just be, because I think that was brought up before, is people invest money into selling fireworks and what happens then. And we do have to consider that, and it sounds like they do consider that in making that decision whether to ban that year. And I would say just having the ability to ban it doesn't mean we're doing it. And it doesn't mean that decision would be made. It just gives us the flexibility. So, and I think if we do look at that, definitely shortening the time frame, that makes complete sense. We have issues with enforcement now with the illegal. We'll have initial, enforcement issues if we have a restriction. So I think no matter what, you don't get away from the enforcement issues, whether we do a restriction or not. So I would be in favor of looking at this and going, allowing us to have a little bit more flexibility, allowing in cases of emergency to make that call. So that's it for now.
All right, Council. So I seem to be hearing a consensus from Councilmember Gamble.
So my concern with looking, I got a little bit of firework off since the late 90s personally, but I think there is wisdom as much as we look at it and go, man, we got to wait a year. If we put anything in that, but is the more I look at the issue, even if you put what you're asking for, the temporary, hey, we want the ability to put a temporary ban. And I've lived in Eastern Washington on two separate occasions, and there's no bigger place for, hey, we want to be extremely cognizant of, the weather, and it's a yearly thing. Is that we put something like that in place, or we contemplate that, we have to be prepared that it is going to be an annual lobbying event. It'll be an annual lobbying event because everybody's definition of what the weather is like and whether it's, we should ban it. And I do tend to agree with, they go off all over my neighborhood, and it's not the stuff that lands in my yard is not legal stuff. It would be human beings and obviously professionals making that decision, but everybody would have their own. Is it been so many days over 80 degrees in a row in the humidity that, you know, well, what's the logic behind it? And then it would depend, you know, we'd have people that would change, you know, in their positions, and then you'd have a chief or whoever we put in, you know, to make that decision, and they're using a little bit different criteria, you know, in regards to that. So, and when you get down to it, and I think it was the chief of police that brought it up, Chief Windsor, that said, you know, hey, or maybe it was Chief Silva, I mean, fireworks for some is like religion. I mean, it is, you know, it's a rite, or it's the exact opposite. It's, we should not have it. It's, you know, a danger in society. So we're creating, by putting that in there, a yearly, guaranteeing ourselves a yearly divide if the sun's out. Every year it comes around. That's what I see. I get the component of, but I also have this strange faith in my fellow citizens and Americans, Washingtonians, just like we did this last year, that, you know what, it was pretty hot outside. And there was a lot of people that were responsible that I know that just didn't light them off that year. And for those that were, we had extra people out with hoses or, you know, whatever the case may be. So I don't think we have to legislate everything. That's my opinion. And then by legislating or trying to put something in place, we actually would be just creating another, you know, pain point on a yearly basis for us to go through. That's all.
Thank you. So I'm hearing a consensus to shorten the time frame to begin July 1st for the sale of fireworks. Does anybody disagree with that? Okay. The other one about doing an emergency ban, I heard a diversity of opinion. Is there a motion to request that staff put together an ordinance that provides the opportunity for an emergency ban? Okay. Seeing none, you have the ability to bring this up again. What's that?
No, I said we have the ability.
Of course, to bring it back again, right. So I'm to understand then that it would be council's direction to bring forward an ordinance to shorten the sale period to July 1st. Staff will work on putting together an ordinance to that effect, and we'll have it before council such that it can be effective July of 2017. So we'll just go ahead and build that into the extended agenda accordingly. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is new business number one. This is AB 16042. Authorize the mayor to sign a consultant agreement for Main Street Program RFP.
Might be a good idea.
Thank you. And Mr. Osaki.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, the 2016 budget had $25,000 set aside specifically for the purpose of bringing on a consultant to essentially evaluate the implementation and path to success to establish a Main Street program in the city of Monroe. And so the city issued a RFP, request for proposals. Two firms responded. There was a staff team that reviewed the proposals, and staff is recommending that you authorize the mayor to sign an agreement with a firm called BDS Planning out of Seattle. And I actually think we're pretty fortunate in this respect, because BDS Planning, their founder and principal, actually has 15 years of experience overseeing the Oregon Downtown Development Association from about the period of the mid-1980s to 2000. And he is very attuned to working with communities on downtown revitalization, downtown organizational issues. So the scope of work that's included as part of this consultant agreement basically calls for the preparation of a strategic plan, about a 3 to 5 year strategic plan for what needs to be done from a variety of different parties in this community to make a successful Main Street program operate. And basically it looks at, for a community of this size, what you might expect a Main Street organization to be able to accomplish, and what's the scale of those activities, and then specifically, there's a high emphasis on this scope of work on funding. And as it relates to funding, if I were in your position as a council, I'd be wanting to know to what extent, if any, the city might be asked to provide funding for an organization like this. So that's one of the questions that needs to be answered by this consultant. Some of the other items as part of this, there's a heavy emphasis on implementation. So I've asked the consultant, I don't want you to do a lot of pretty pictures. I don't want you to reinvent what's already been done. We have a good downtown plan. We have a variety of other documents. I really need almost a business plan for how this organization can function over time. And again, what the city's role would be part as part of that. And then there's also a pretty robust public involvement for $25,000. It's actually pretty robust public involvement component to this as well. The stakeholder committee, the consultant will meet with that stakeholder committee several times, and they will also meet, have set up 12 individual interviews with individuals we haven't identified yet, but basically for the consultant to get a lay of the land, what some of the obstacles might be and what some of the opportunities might be. So again, staff recommended that you authorize the mayor to sign this consultant agreement. That's before you get the packet tonight. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I move to authorize the mayor to sign the consultant agreement with BDS Planning and Urban Design for the Main Street Program RFP and expressly authorize any further minor revisions as deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
Thank you. I have a first from Councilmember Camp. I have a second from Councilmember Rasmussen to authorize the mayor to sign the contract with BDS Planning and Urban Design for Main Street Program RFP. Is there any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Cutterback.
Just a comment. I'm glad we're moving forward, and well, I hope we are. I shouldn't count my chickens, right? And I'm glad that you explained the next steps, and this is more like a business plan and take it to the next step, because I do believe we still have a great downtown plan that had tons of public input. So to have that section and really kind of action steps of what we need to do next in order to make it happen is going to be great. So I'm going to be voting in favor.
All right. Anything further? Okay. We have a motion on the table and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you very much. We are pulling new business item number 2. This is a discussion on Track 999, North Kelsey Village, Monroe. So we're going to be pulling that from the agenda. We're going to reschedule it for a later date. We are now going to move on to final action. This is final action for AB 16044, Ordinance Number 002-2016, amending MMC 2012, Transportation Impact Fees, first and final reading. Mr. Osaki or Mr. Feilberg? Mr. Feilberg.
Thank you. In order to encourage the reoccupation of empty businesses around town, empty buildings around town, when people come in and ask for this, we've noticed we've run into the problem of the payment of additional transportation impact fees for a change of use. When we adopted the 2015 comprehensive plan and transportation element of that, we rearranged how the fees were charged, and in some cases it's changed that. Prior to that adoption, some people would not have had to pay additional fees. Now they do have to pay additional fees. So a recommended solution is actually to not charge transportation impact fees for changes of use. So if somebody goes from a retail sporting clothing shop to a bakery kind of operation, they wouldn't have to pay any additional fees. That's the intent, and in order to do that, we had to change the Monroe Municipal Code, Chapter 20.12, to change the definition of development activity to remove a change of use from that definition. So new buildings would still have to pay for the transportation impact fees, but just changing the use of the building would not have that charge taken against them. There is one thing we have changed, however, in addition to that, is somebody comes in with a new building with a certain use, but before we actually occupy that building, they change the use, they can still be charged with the new use fees. That's just to keep people from claiming that all the new buildings happen in town are warehouses, which has the smallest fee possible, and then having them turn into something else when they actually are occupied. This is being done as an emergency, so it becomes effective immediately, so that we don't miss the development season for the summer if anybody wants to do anything. You'll be having a hearing on the city urban ordinance, and then also it's going through the planning commission process to have the public input and recommendation from the planning commission, and that will be coming back to you later on. And in fact, if anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. I believe we need to make a motion to amend the council procedures for to make it first and final reading tonight.
Do we need to do that?
We weren't able to do that on the 22nd.
This is being introduced for the first time tonight?
Sure.
Well, we introduced it last meeting, two meetings ago.
It wouldn't hurt.
Okay.
Yeah, because I listened to the tape and then...
We didn't adopt it.
Oh, it was discussion. You're right.
Discussion.
Thank you.
So I'll move to waive council procedures to allow ordinance number 002-2016 amending NMC 20.12 to go first and final reading at once.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford and a second from Councilmember Gamble to waive doing both a first and then final reading at a later date to do both tonight. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0.
Next, I'll make a move to adopt ordinance number 02-2016, an ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, amending Chapter 20.12 NMC, transportation impact fees, clarifying the applicability of transportation impact fees to development activity involving changes of use, providing for severability, and establishing an effective date.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Gamble to move to adopt ordinance number 002-2016. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you very much. All right, the next item on the agenda is Councilmember reports. We're going to go ahead and start off with the committee reports. So City Council Finance and Human Resources Committee, and I believe the committee chair is Chair Gamble.
Yes, so we did meet tonight and reviewed our draft agenda for the year for the committee to take a look at. Includes that, so it should no longer be draft, but obviously we can plot something on there anytime we think we need to take a look at. Points of interest on that, if I notes on it, would be contract renewal. It would also be the continued focus on. As we look at the capital projects of priority in nature, specifically the campus plan, and just continue, you know, that's just an ongoing, you know, as data becomes available on that. We reviewed the spreadsheet that we did in open session around our areas of priority, both from a personnel perspective and a capital perspective, you know, the deferred maintenance from the streets we talked about, and popped it into the spreadsheet to kind of see where what we could get for RTOL are based off of our bank capacity that we've discussed about several different times that we know that because we haven't raised property taxes in an extremely long time. So there is more discussion to be had. I know that, you know, really what came out of the meeting tonight was that, you know, kind of a continuance of the discussion around carrying to the May 3rd meeting, and then we will most likely be scheduling a second meeting in the May time frame to discuss more because the mayor does need to be able to give direction by June as we look to set budget going into the 2017 year. So I think we'll also be talking more in open session or in full council, so the opportunity for full council to be able to, if there's anything that you want the finance committee to take a look at in more depth, that we can take that direction as well. I miss anything? All right.
That's good. Okay. Thank you. The next committee item is Snohomish County Tomorrow Steering Committee. Councilmember Camp.
And I was out ill that week, so I missed it.
All right. Thank you. All right, let's go around for individual council member reports. Councilmember Scarborough.
Nothing to report.
Okay. Councilmember Gamble.
Other than this last weekend, we had the kickoff for the Sky Valley out at Rotary Field. Great turnout. Weather was fantastic. Fields look great, Mike. Across the board, we had a lot of the local vendors that participated in helping support and selling their wares on site. And they had Brett Lillibridge, local pro, who spent years in the majors, that came out through the first pitch, and then Jordan Birch, who, if you're not familiar, she owns every softball record at the Monroe High School, and was a a All-American at, I want to say Illinois. No, if I get it wrong, she'd be really ticked, so I'm just going to say college in Illinois, Illinois State University or the other. Was great, so they both went. Brett threw out for the boys for Little League, and then Jordan threw out the first pitch for softball girls. She showed them up. It was really good. And then we had Webley from the Aqua Sox was out here. So very, very good turnout, good showcase. Park system looked good. It did illustrate the need for our nets that we've talked about again. So I'm glad I know that you guys are already moving in that way. And then one of the other things that came up throughout the day, and we've never really talked about it, and I can't remember if it was something that you guys were looking into, is the ball return for foul balls. You guys, have we looked into that at all? That was the number one. Where you just cut basically a hole, you put a PVC so that instead of people trying to throw them back over the fences, because you just
put it through.
Yeah. So maybe if it should be a really low cost item that we could do that would keep kids from hitting their parents as it hits off the. And bounces back at him because they can't get it back over. Anyway, that's it.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Davis.
I don't have anything, thank you.
Okay, Councilmember Camp.
Well, first, I'm beginning to feel like the safety guinea pig in the city.
Okay.
I want to say thank you to everyone who called and sent me messages after a little incident a few weeks ago. And thanks for putting in the new armrest for Mr. Hanford's seat.
I did that.
Makes me feel a lot better. How old are the chairs?
What's that?
How old are these chairs?
I sat in these chairs when I served as a council member over a decade ago. And
I didn't want to repeat, so I would really like to recommend that we look into getting some new chairs.
Yes, I expressed that to staff that evening when you shared that with me. The estimated cost is about $3,000 for chairs.
$200 to $300 a piece.
Yeah. So we will be bringing forward a budget amendment at some point in the next 6 weeks or so, and it may be that as part of that process we can look at that. But I did share that with staff, and that was the estimate. I just haven't had a chance to get back to you.
But thanks for the responsiveness, because that was I didn't even think about that. That kind of a safety issue, and I was just seeing that when I walked in tonight was a good thing.
It was up by Thursday.
Was it really?
Yeah, of that week, yeah.
Okay. I didn't hear any comments about divots, and I want to thank the chief for his plan for the naming of the new structure, but Memorial doesn't quite work yet. And that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Egg hunt this year. Fantastic, as always. Seems like more and more people every year. And great weather held out, and it was just another outstanding morning. And like I said, tons and tons of people down there. So great job to Mike Parks Department and all city staff for putting that together once again. Skate park groundbreaking coming up on Thursday. Really looking forward to that. And I got to tell council, when I sat on Parks Board, and I remember when this came to the Parks Board, and Ralph Yingling, or Ying, his son, actually brought this forward, and he was one of the original kids that came up with the concept and the ideas of the skate park the way it is today. And many, many years down the road, he's now in college and brings this forward, and it was just a really cool opportunity to be on that team and review that and support it and actually see this moving forward and coming true. So I'm excited, really looking forward to this opportunity, and trying my best to get down there on Thursday to be a part of it. So
it's 4:30.
4:30. Yep.
Thank you.
I think we have going to that ribbon cutting just for.
We're doing a notice that there could be a quorum.
The notice has already been distributed.
Yes. Thank you. All right, anything further, Councilmember Rasmussen? Okay, did you get the responses you were looking for the Snohomish Health District email?
From our council, I haven't received anything. So,
can we send them to you?
Excuse me?
Can we send...
You can send them to...
Yeah, or do we have to send them to you?
Why don't you send them to me, and then I'll go ahead and, or Gene, and one of us will go ahead and consolidate them and send them. We did reach out to take the next step, and also the food bank, as the WIC program and those sorts of programs really benefit folks that may use those facilities. And Kara, on Sunday, sent back a pretty detailed email with some responses and some follow-up questions, and Councilmember Rasmussen responded to the questions that were in there yesterday afternoon. So thank you very much for being responsive to those, and if anybody else has anything to add, please go ahead and email me or Gene, and I'll make certain that things get consolidated in an appropriate fashion to get to Councilmember Rasmussen, okay?
If I may add, yep. The meeting, our next meeting is next Tuesday, and at least at this point, it's anticipated that we're going to be asked to take a vote. And at this point, it's, you know, I'd love to hear more feedback from our communities on it. So,
okay.
Especially being that we do have a pregnancy aid WIC center here in Monroe, that if the transition happens as planned, you know, what happens to that is unknown, but it's safe to assume that it wouldn't be no more. So.
Okay. You could probably use feedback by Friday so that can be put together and you can present the information by Monday, because they probably will want that information ahead of time,
yeah.
Especially if you're being expected to vote on Tuesday. Okay. All right. Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Nothing tonight.
Okay. Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, a couple things. First of all, my email's been down for a while, so I didn't even know about that. But I'll just get it up and running tomorrow afternoon, so we'll see. Second of all, yeah, I didn't know why this showed up. I just thought somebody finally was thinking of my safety.
So oh, we are. Yeah.
So, but I didn't know that happened. So, sorry about that.
It's an armrest.
And then, yeah, so the 22nd, I was absent for my 25th wedding anniversary. That was great time away. And I listened to the honoring. I know you were gone too, but I listened to the tape. So that's pretty much it.
Thank you. Let's go out to staff. Mr. Worthen?
Nothing tonight.
Okay. Mr. Farrell?
Thank you, Mayor. Noticing the rails there, the skateboarders, I want to grind on those. So it's already mentioned this Thursday at 4:30 at Lakeside Park. We had an exciting groundbreaking, and yes, it's been a long time coming, so we're excited to really, literally break ground on that project. So they expect to complete the project in July, so it's going to be three busy months and a lot of work being done, and I'm sure the community is going to enjoy the results of the project. I'll also let you know that we're applying for a Snohomish County TPA grant, Tourism Promotion Area grant. This is to continue to support the Tribe and Row Triathlon. What the grant request is for is for temporary fencing, the kind of screen fencing that you see at events. We're doing this in partnership with the Snohomish County Tourism Bureau's Sports Commission. So we'll be purchasing, if the grant is awarded, 14 rolls of this. It'll be about 1,400 linear feet of fencing, and also 40 feet of steel barricades that we can set up. And so we can use this for the Tribe and Row event, but we also utilize it for other events that we host in Monroe as well. So it's definitely something that would be good for our events in Monroe. And lastly, I just want to update you. We did have some issues with the restrooms at Sky River Park. We have automatic door locks on these restrooms, and we had a couple of instances where the locks, the lock timer malfunctioned. So it was an inconvenience to people that were out there in the fields, and we apologize for that. We troubleshooted the issue, and we replaced the board on the clock, so it seems to have solved the issue. So it worked fine. as far as, you know. And that's all.
Any questions for Councilmember, I'm sorry, Councilmember Farrell? Any questions for Mr. Farrell? Councilmember Rasmussen?
Yeah, thanks. Hey, Mike, on your grant request for the fencing and the posts, is it, do they need letters of support, or would it be helpful for letters of support?
I don't believe they do. We're doing this in partnership with the Tourism Bureau. We're trying to get this in as soon as possible. This grant program, you can apply kind of throughout the year. So we're going to put in this request right away and hopefully get an answer. We believe it's a strong application, and we want to be able to purchase and get this stuff before the Try and Grow event. And the Try and Grow event is June 25th, so we're kind of on a tight timeline. So
June 18th, I thought.
Excuse me?
Oh, the Try and Monroe?
I thought it was
June
18th.
Okay.
It's in June. What is it? Right.
Yeah. If you needed support, I would certainly ask council for that. So let us know.
Okay. Anything further? All right, Ms. Nelson?
Nothing tonight.
Okay, Ms. Durosaki?
I have nothing
tonight. Okay. Mr. Feilberg?
Thanks.
We had a meeting last week with the people from the police department, fire department, Snowpack, and the Snohomish County Enhanced 911 office. The next generation of Enhanced 911 is changing how calls for emergency services are dispatched. You're switching from a road segment process to an XY coordinate method of determining where the caller is located and what public safety answering point the call is routed to. In the past, if the address was between, say, for example, 18500 and 18599 Galloway Bay, matter whether it was odd or even, the call would go through to the correct point. With the new National Emergency Number Association standards, if the XY coordinates of the call is located on the even side of the street, but the address is an odd number, the call will be kicked out of the normal process and actually sent to the King County Sheriff's Office, rather than the local public safety answering point. This can cause significant delays in dispatching emergency responders to the request for assistance. Snohomish County E911 office has run all of the Monroe addresses through the algorithm and has identified 8 areas that have address issues based on odd and even numbers being on the incorrect or non-standard sizes of the streets. So we went through that process, found all the locations, and are going to be renumbering those with addresses for the correct side of the street. The places are Academy Way, which is just down the street here. When that was originally developed, it was numbered consecutively, so it goes 1, 2, 3, 4 down one side of the street, then 6, 7, 8 up the other side of the street. Smith Street is the same thing, which is just off Kelsey Street, one block down from Main Street. They're consecutively 1, 2, 3, 4. Then there's just some interesting places that just have the wrong address. There's one up on 161st Place, there's one on 136th Place, and then there's the whole area of Cascade View Drive. For example, the New Monroe Co-op, which is the New Monroe Farm and Feed, the utility billing system has an address, my database has an address, which is different. The Snohomish County Auditor's Office has a different address, which are all different than the address that the Co-op has in their advertising. So that will be changed. That would also affect the fairgrounds office or the maintenance building they have there in the old Prairie Market. The Waco landscaping materials business and the Washington State Department of Transportation maintenance office. And then there are 2 apartment buildings on Galloway Bay, which is off Blueberry Lane, one block east of Kelsey Street, and one block west of Kelsey Street.
when it was originally addressed in 1975, it appears that they counted it as an east-west street and just numbered along Blueberry Lane. So it actually, so one of them is on an odd, even number, which should be an odd, but they're also in the wrong 100 blocks, so we're going to be changing both of those apartment buildings. So all total, it's about 21 different addresses which will be changed. And so that's that one.
Before you continue.
If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Does anybody have any questions? Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Feilberg.
Okay. The next one is the city council authorized the mayor to sign a lease agreement with Constellation Data Communications doing business as Sky Valley Wi-Fi on December 17th of 2013. The agreement was signed by the then mayor on that date, and it has yet to be executed by the lessee. The lessee has recently become active in pursuing the necessary permits for the antennas to be installed, but at this time does not wish to sign the agreement to actually make it a valid agreement with the city. There are things that haven't been done yet, such as the time's not ticking for him to get done. We're not collecting any money on it. Staff is spending a considerable amount of time working with him, getting his permits. He hasn't had his required background checks done for getting access to our sites and things like that. So just bringing that to the council's attention and just seeing if the council is interested in having that agreement hanging out there that he may sign someday or not, or would actually like to put a time period on whether that would like to be signed by the lessee. And if anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Brad, are there any, what is our liability by having the current situation? Or it's just hanging there?
There's no liability. It's just the amount of staff time that is being taken up working on this contract with this individual and with no compensation to the city. And this is a private enterprise, for-profit enterprise that the city is basically doing work for.
Right. Is there some issue with the 90-day?
There's a 90-day test period.
Right.
And he's concerned that if he signs the agreement, that 90-day period starts. And if he doesn't get his permits in that time, he cannot install the antennas.
Now, is that normal for a business relationship with the city?
Okay.
I mean, I don't know how.
Yeah, we've actually never done. This is the first one.
Okay.
Besides something else that happens out in Lake High. where we have an agreement with a private individual to do something like that. So another issue could be that the city could say cancel their offer. Basically, we have an offer out to them now. Cancel that, redo it. That says you have and expand the period of time that maybe he is paying some money towards the city for the services the city is providing. During that process and give them more time to have the antennas installed.
Could you, and through the mayor, would it be possible to contact this person and have them either send a list of their concerns that you can address or that he feels the council should address to council? Or ask him to come in and...
I mean, as far as he's concerned, everything's fine.
So what's the issue?
Staff.
Staff time, but...
Staff just wants to make the council aware that the staff is spending funds for a private profit enterprise.
Working with him to make create the permits, correct?
Correct.
That's the issue with the city.
Not as the city as a permitting agency, but the permitting doing his applications for him. With no compensation.
You're creating his...
He's asking us to do his permit work for him.
Okay. I would like, if you could reach out to him, ask him to either come to the council and explain what this permitting process problem is, or send him an email asking him if he could explain it in a written format, so we know what's going on. Because I agree that we should be, this has been going on for a while, I think we should address it. All right.
Anything further?
I'm done.
Okay, Councilor.
With all due respect to the mayor, You direct the work, I'm just suggesting that's what I'd like to see.
Yes, understood.
Okay.
Councilmember Scarborough.
To what advantage, I think you've answered this in this last sentence. The advantage is we're doing the work, he's getting what he needs, and it's on our dime.
Correct.
I find something wrong with that myself. I think that I agree with Mr. Camp that we need to talk to this person and say it's time to, you know, put a timeline on it, expect them to do their own work, or pay us for our time. That's my comment.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford?
Thank you. Can you just clarify why are we not charging for us doing all of his permits?
Well, we're not doing it. He just asks. But because the contract doesn't address that. He's supposed to, you know, I think it was the vision. We signed, he signed. He had 90 days to get his stuff done. And then he started paying us his rent for the antennas.
Okay.
But the rent doesn't kick in until after someone signs the agreement.
And what date was this originally signed on?
December 17th, 2013.
Mr. Anything further, Councilmember Hanford?
I support what has been suggested.
Mr. Brazel?
Director Fowler, can you please remind council how much we're getting lease payment on this?
Well, the lease payment proposed when they start is $40 per month per antenna.
Our response time is an hour.
And also, and during that agreement period, during 8 to 5, he can call us anytime he wants access to the antennas, and we have to respond within an hour to let him in.
Because he can't go on the site by himself.
Mr. Brazel, you still have the floor.
I would just add that would be a union employee. It'd be a call out at a minimum of 3 hours pay.
Well, that's only through
normal
business.
Okay. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I guess I'm confused. I thought you said he just asked you to build the permits, or you are creating.
No, we're not doing it. He keeps asking us for the information and wants us to take him up to the towers for so you can do measurements and things like that, and you know, our employees are busy with street projects and road projects and putting in water lanes and things like that, and basically we have to pull somebody out of the project to let him in up there and see while he's there.
Okay, that sounds like it's some sort of issue in the contract, but I just want to make sure that, because if I understood what you just said before, that he has asked you and you are working on creating the permit. All right, that's the part that I misunderstood.
Yeah.
Back to my original statement. It sounds like he needs to send an explanation of what he would like to have done. And I know that there are concerns about that 90-day window that I was made aware of. The clock ticking, I don't know, something to do with the testing. I don't understand it. But I'll go back to my original statement. But thanks for clearing that up. I thought you were saying that you were already creating the permits. Thank you.
Cut it back.
I guess I'm unclear why we would 2.5 years later have this still open. So I don't know if we need to send a copy of the contract to us. Without seeing the contract, it's hard to ask the right questions or to...
Right.
I mean, it's been since December 2013. It's December... I mean, we're in 2016. So it'll be almost 3 years this year with an unsigned contract.
Our city attorney, you still have the floor. Our city attorney would like to chime in.
Very briefly, counsel, if he has not, or the lessee, the purported lessee, has not yet executed the contract, there is no contract. So technically what has, if I'm hearing the situation correctly, what exists right now is an offer by the city for this individual to actually enter into the agreement. And if the council wants to rescind that offer at this point, given the lapse of time, I think it's well within its rights to do that. Not that I'm necessarily recommending that, but I want the council to be aware of it, that the agreement is simply a piece of paper unless and until both parties actually execute it.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense that it sounds like he calls and we let him and do this thing and there's no contract, and it's 2.5 years later. So I would say that without knowing any other situation or other reasons, it sounds like an unreasonable amount of time that somebody has not accepted an offer and we have not moved through this. So maybe taking a look at the contract, but I might be in favor based on city's recommendation, staff's recommendation on rescinding this, but I don't have that in front of me, so.
Okay. So staff and I will go back and look at this and talk with our attorney a little bit more. This was brought to my attention on Thursday, and I asked that council go ahead and, I'm sorry, that staff go ahead and give an update on this during council member reports, which is why it's not in the agenda this evening with the contract. So I thank everybody for understanding, and we'll be following up with council as may be appropriate over the next couple weeks or so. All right. Councilmember Hanford, do you have anything else?
Just support what she said. Thanks.
All right. Mr. Fowler, do you have anything further?
Just a couple more things. They've done the pilot asphalt on Journey Place. So that's coming along really good. Hopefully it'll be open soon. Probably about another month. And we're digging up Columbia Street. West State sidewalks are out to bid. And Rivermont will be starting soon for that work up there. So.
Great. Does anybody else have any other questions for Mr. Feilberg? Councilmember Scarborough?
When you talk about Attorney Place being done in a month or about a month, does that include the signal, or will we go through there before the signal's in place?
No, the signal will be done at the same time.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Anything further from Mr. Feilberg? Okay. Chief Quinzer.
I have two things. First of all, the 2016 legislature, in their wisdom, passed a bill, both houses did, that referenced body cameras. Of course, the our governor vetoed it, and then the legislature, in their wisdom, overrode his veto, which is a good thing. The body camera bill is a bill that law enforcement has worked on in this legislative session. ACLU has worked on, and it's come up with a really good deal for police departments. And one of the reasons why it's so good is that it has reduced the public disclosure exposure that we would have. In other words, someone cannot go in and request all tapes, video of your body cameras. They have to have a vested interest in a particular case, and it's very very specific to that, and it's the best we've seen as far as disclosure on it. The problem that we encountered, that we have to have a program underway by June 10th of this year, and this runs until July of 2019. And my feeling is, from listening and talking to chiefs around the United States, is that by July of 2019, probably the Department of Justice will require every police department in the United States to have body cameras. And it will not have the public disclosure items in it that the state of Washington is proposing in this this particular bill. We are working with our Officers Guild. They are voting on it tomorrow night to see if they want to participate in it. I told them that we would like to start with up to two officers. I didn't care who the officers were, they could pick them. I have no interest in singling out officers, certain officers to wear this. So they're voting on it. We will present if they vote for it, a resolution or ordinance to the council for their support on it. We have to put together a policy. The policy will also utilize citizen input. And hopefully, if again, if the guild votes for it, we'll have everything to go by June 10th. The only police departments in the state of Washington that I've heard are opposed to it are, one of them is the King County Sheriff, and the only reason he's opposed is because he can't get his act together by June 10th, is what he said. Other than that, it's a great thing for police departments, and if you really delve into it, I think officers will support something like this, and the reason they would support it because it gives the whole picture. That's not just a snippet of somebody with a camera video that does take a picture of it for about 30 seconds, something like this. So this will give the whole picture of it. So I'm enthused about it, but again, it's up to them if they want to do it. They can. If they don't want to do it, they will eventually have to do it without these protections in it. So other thing I have is it's...
Chief, just a second. Are you moving off of body cameras?
Yes.
Okay. Councilmember, cut it back, and then...
Chief, I had heard this at another meeting about the body cameras being used in, like, a medical environment because, you know, going into a hospital with somebody because of HIPAA.
Mm-hmm.
So are you guys required to turn them off, or they're just not allowable for public disclosure? But because of HIPAA, you don't have to turn them off?
That's exactly it. You don't have to turn them off.
Okay. But could you turn them off?
We could turn them. That'll be in our policy.
Okay.
When we can turn them off and when we can't turn
okay.
them off. Likewise, when you go in a house, a home, they're going to be running, but there's a vast majority of any video taken in that house will not be disclosable unless there's a member in that house that makes the request. They have to make
yeah,
a specific
because of HIPAA, I didn't know if you were actually required to turn them off. Not that they're just not disclosable, but required to turn it off because of the HIPAA.
No. It's no different than if we're standing beside the victim in the hospital room and they're being administered some type of medication and the like. We don't discuss that either because that's the reference HIPAA.
Yeah.
And we don't disclose the other either. The second item I have is it's with great sadness that I need to report that Officer Canine Joker passed away this last week. He was one of our best tracking dogs we ever had, and he was about 12 years old, and it was just he was just having a lot of medical issues, and so he passed away this week. That's all I have.
Thank you, Councilmember Scarborough.
Do you have a replacement for this tracking dog?
Yes, yes.
Just in training or just not as experienced as the old one?
He's in service. Joker retired approximately two and a half years ago. We have a program that when we have our retired canines, whether it's the tracking dogs or drug dogs, and if the handler is willing to take them, we pay $500 a year for their medical upkeep and whatever else that the handler would like to spend on the dog just for the welfare of the dog. So they do have a retirement program.
It seems like we just had this retirement ceremony.
Yep. That's right. All right, Councilmember Hanford.
Thanks. What home was the service dog in?
Pardon?
What home was the service dog in when he passed away?
Jay Cardswell. Officer Jay Cardswell.
That's what I thought. Yes. Thank you.
All right. So, really quickly up to me. Last week I attended the Puget Sound Regional Council's General Assembly. I was not able to stay for the last roughly 20 to 30 minutes of that. I had a meeting back here at the city. They did vote on the budget for next year. There were also a couple of speeches about light rail and things along those lines. So we were down in Seattle, and they were celebrating the fact that the light rail station had just been completed to the UW, and that the 520 bridge was to be completed. So anyway, the materials from the meeting are there for your interest. Also, if you take a look at Monroe this week, you'll note in there a number of things that I attended or was part of last week. You'll note that I was at Take the Next Step last week. Snohomish County and King County, the two, basically the equivalent of Snohomish County cities, hosted Snohomish County cities in King County. I attended that meeting and got a legislative update. The only legislators that were there were from the Democratic Party. The other folks were not able to make it, and so they basically gave their impression of the session, just expressing in particular that next year they anticipate it will be a more challenging time in terms of the budget because of the decision related to our education system. I also noted that we have the Lake Tai Skate Park. That's at 4:30 on April 7th. I would encourage you to RSVP to staff, although you don't need to. Be happy to see everyone there. So we can get a picture. We have been, we've invited Senator Pearson and Representatives Christensen and Scott to attend, and other folks. We also, to let you know, last week the downtown parking signs went up, and we ended up getting contacted through social media and also through email by folks that wanted to know how they got their, how to get their residential parking passes, and I think we got that ironed out where people understand how to do that now. We did get comments from two employers in the downtown expressing concern that employees had expressed to them about the general lack of parking now in the downtown, in particular because of the four-hour parking that is actually because of the two or four-hour parking on Blakely by the post office and Hill and Fremont. There are employees that used to park on those streets that are just, just one block off of Main Street that, they've got 8-9 hour shifts, so they've now got to go out and move the cars. And they have requested that the council look at alternatives, and I've sent you all an email on Saturday identifying a couple of potential alternatives in the event that the council would like to revisit that decision. One alternative was to do an employee parking pass in the downtown, and of course there are administrative costs associated with that. The other one, which would be simpler, would be if the council wanted to look at removing the parking time limit, for example, on portions of Hill Street and or portions of Fremont. That would be as simple as going out and taking down signs for a stretch of those two blocks. So again, I emailed that to you, and if council would like, we can bring this back for discussion in next Tuesday or the Tuesday after. Is there any interest in doing that? Councilmember Gamble?
What's the volume of what we're talking here? Folks that are, I didn't read your email on Saturday, so I'm not sure how many people are complaining about. What's the volume?
Right. I've received complaints from two businesses right now, two different businesses. One of them is Adams, okay. From an employee there, and I don't remember what the other business is.
You don't want to walk. I'm not trying to sound callous. I'm saying that the complaint, I want to understand the complaint.
Right.
They can't park because of the 4 hour now, so they have to park further away.
Right. They have to park about another block away in more residential neighborhoods. So
they want to park right next to the establishment.
No. No, they were parking about a block away before. So the thing is that I recognize that we could have a conversation. We still have need for a couple of executive sessions. So is there an interest in bringing this back to a council meeting as early as next week for discussion? Councilmember Scarborough?
I'd be interested.
Okay. Is there any opposition to bringing this back? Or? Go ahead and speak out.
Well, I was just going to say, when did the signs go up?
about a week and a half ago.
Yeah, I mean, we got to give it time. We knew when we made any kind of change in the parking that not everybody was going to be happy, and we all had discussed that. I think we looked at what the vision was for the parking. It was to encourage people to be able to park and shop and come down, and that's why we did the four-hour limit to meander, and that was our main vision for down there. So I think giving it time to flush out, and we knew that there was going to be some issues with employees, but there is parking around outside, you know, that Main Street area that's no limit whatsoever. So, I mean, with two complaints, I don't know if it's worthy to have more discussion so early on.
Okay. Are there two council members who would like this to come back? I guess that would be the question. So I'm seeing head nods to not bring this back next week. Okay, Councilmember Gamble and then Councilmember Scarborough.
Yeah, I mean, we spent a long time soliciting input, feedback, public forums, actually you going downtown talking. So I would concur we need to wait a little bit. Yeah, maybe it's a P4.
We spent a lot of time on it.
We have not spent a lot of time on that subject. So
I say we hold.
I agree.
For a while, at least.
So I would encourage you to take a look at the email that I sent out on Saturday, just so that you can understand, should additional complaints come in, or that you've got that information before you. And if you've got any questions for me or for staff, please let me know, and I'll respond, or I'll have staff respond. Councilmember Scarborough?
Well, I'll go back and defer to the people on council that have more knowledge of the subject than I had. I'll just talk with some of you about what you went through to get there, and then discuss whether or not we need to bring it back at a later time.
Okay. All right. So that was the update on downtown parking. You'll also take a look at, I've got the updates in there on the comparisons. You'll note that sales tax is up about $125,000, or 13% for the year. Real estate excise tax is up nearly $50,000, or nearly 30% for the year. You'll notice that our building permits are down just slightly right now, and as Mr. Osaki has mentioned, we anticipate a number of building permit applications coming in the door over the next couple months, and even as of this evening, I signed a short plat. So we've, as had been commented before, we've got about 800 lots that are in the pipeline. The last thing, please note that Tuesday next week I'll be giving a sort of a state of the city address to the Chamber of Commerce. That's it. I think that starts at 11:30 on Tuesday, a week from today. And we're going to go ahead and hand things over to our city administrator, to Mr. Brazel.
Thank you. Last week I attended an economic development meeting that was hosted actually by Snohomish County, put on by Economic Alliance. And while we were pretty even with all the other surrounding cities that were represented that day in regards to commercial development, we were far ahead of most of our sister cities on residential development. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So I want to share that. And we've got the agenda for April 12th, 2016. Under announcements and presentations, Greenlight Strategies will be here reporting out, and they will also be at the Legislative Affairs meeting earlier that evening. We've got the consent agenda, and then we go right into council member reports. The Legislative Affairs Committee will report out, Community Transit, and the Snohomish County Health District. Additions or deletions?
Councilmember Cutterback.
I am going to attend the groundbreaking or the ribbon cutting for the skateboard park instead of this meeting. They conflict, and so I will not be at the transit board meeting as an alternate. I will miss this one. Just one minute.
Okay.
But you guys will get the minutes from everyone, but I won't attend, so I'd rather be at the skateboard park.
Understood.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. And you attended Skip last week for me because I wasn't able to make that. Do you want to give a brief report on Skip?
Yeah, I can definitely do that. The main discussion was in regards to the light rail transit project that had been proposed. Sound Transit 3 is what it's being called, and the main conflicts that are out there
course, it's a long timeline for it to reach Everett, and at the last minute, apparently, I don't have all the history, but it appeared at the last minute they included two spurs, one that went to West Seattle and the other one to Ballard. And the concern from most people at the committee meeting was that dollars and cents are going to be spent on those two spurs prior to it ever making it to Everett, and they're afraid that the money will run out and it won't make it to Everett, but yet the spurs will be far sooner than it will make it to Everett. So there's some support letters for changing the way the construction is being proposed. It is an expensive project. I think there's four different routes. One's up I-5, another one's up I-5, and it cuts over to Highway 99, and that's actually the most expensive route running up Highway 99 Evergreen Way. There's concerns about that. One of the proposals was light rail or light bus transit system that would run Bowling employees essentially out to I-5 and back and forth. But at any rate, it is a big project. I think there's definitely benefit there, but the date for it making it to Everett is 2044.
Something like that.
Not mistaken. So it's a ways out. And the last concern was, I believe it was voiced by Edmonds, that their population is elderly, and a lot of those folks that are paying taxes for this thing will never see it be built.
Yeah.
So.
The district that is contributing to this project goes all the way up to Everett, and so the observation that was made to me is that everybody that's paying into it geographically, you won't see an equitable distribution of the system for use. I don't believe that we would pay for it here in Monroe. We're outside of that district. In fact, I know that we're outside of the district. People up in Everett that'll be paying into it might not want to pass that tax that if they're not going to see it. We were asked earlier today or late last week if I would lend support for Sound Transit 3 being extended all the way to Everett, and I went ahead and added my name to the bottom of the letter today. It's something that certainly I know the people that take the trestle right now to get over to the train station and then take the train or the bus down to points southward, and having this sort of system built will improve travel for people on the I-5 corridor, which includes some of our residents that work down that way. It's also important to note that there are, you know, when we are looking for support for things like 522, it's good for us to also lend support where it's appropriate, and I felt this was appropriate. So, all right. Anything further?
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So we've gone over the extended agenda and the draft agenda, and we are now in need of an executive session, and in fact, two executive sessions. The first one is potential litigation pursuant to RCW 42301101I for approximately 10 minutes, and then actual litigation RCW 42301101I for approximately 5 minutes. Mr. Lowell, would it be appropriate for me to just say that between the two, we have approximately 15 minutes with action potentially to follow?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, and to clarify for the record that you're combining those two, and the council will not reconvene an open session in between the executive sessions.
Thank you. What Mr. Lowell said is
accurate.
Thank you. All right, so we're going to go into executive session for approximately 15 minutes. All right, we're back in session, coming out of executive session. Is there a motion to extend past 10 o'clock? The time right now is 9:58.
I move to extend past 10 o'clock.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion from Councilmember Cuddeback and a second from Councilmember Davis to extend past 10 o'clock. Any discussion on the motion? Put your hand up. Okay, seeing none, all in favor of extending past 10, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes 5-1. Please let the record show that Councilmember Camp was not in the room to vote on that motion. We're going to return to executive session with the same citations I provided before for approximately 10 minutes with action to follow. Thank you.
Anybody have any food?
you guys have any food for Councilman Campbell?
No, it's all good.
Let me know when we're back on. Okay, we're back on. All right, we're now out of executive session. Time right now is 10:26. There being no other business, Councilmember Gamble?
I would like to give direction for consensus. Direction to the mayor. Would like you to work with staff to explore the potential option of achieving compliance with the growth board's order in the East Monroe case by adopting a resolution disavowing the city council's intent to continue with the reclassification and rezone of the East Monroe property at your earliest convenience.
So what we have here is we have a request for direction. Is there a consensus? So is there any objection to that statement? Councilmember Cutback?
Since we've received the Growth Management Board's hearing decision on last Friday, and we've been dealing with this case for about 6 years, if not longer, and we had heard many council members on record talk about, even though they proceeded with pursuing this case, to have this last shot to take it to the Growth Management Board. We did that. So I would like a little bit stronger. I would actually like to make a motion to have the mayor direct staff to bring back a resolution formally disavowing its current intent to proceed with East Monroe reclassification and rezone, and declaring publicly that it considers the original Heritage Baptist Church application to be effectively closed. I would ask that we bring back that resolution on April.
Okay.
No, it's not. It's 12.
Next week. I would ask the mayor direct the staff to bring back a resolution next week.
Okay.
That's that.
Okay, so I have a request for consensus. I have a motion. Does a motion is action? Is that correct?
Yes, there is no consensus if there's apparently been a motion that is different than, I believe, Councilmember Gamble's request for simple consensus. So there's no motion on the floor.
So there's a motion on the floor. Is there a second to the motion? All right. So there's a motion on the floor from Councilmember Cutback. There's a second from Councilmember Rasmussen. It's now time for discussion on the motion that's on the floor. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, I would like to request the city attorney do some research to determine whether or not Councilmember Scarborough, since he lives in the vicinity of that property, needs to be recused or needs to recuse himself from the vote or not. So I would be looking for support for that. Another council member, and I will not be voting in favor of this, only because I would like to know whether Councilmember Scarborough needs to be recused himself from this vote or not. I don't feel it's right for us to have to be until that situation's been resolved. I don't think it's right for us to vote on that. Nothing against you at all, Councilman Scarborough, but I'm sorry that you're in this position.
Is there any other discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing no discussion on the motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, will those who said who opposed please put your hands up? Okay, the motion carries with count.
Point of order, Mr. Mayor.
I don't think our rules allow for an abstention.
Point of order, Mr. Mayor. You cannot abstain.
Yes.
We're going to discuss that next week.
Right.
By being present but not voting, you are voting affirmatively. I just thought I'd point that out.
As you vote, I'm gone, and then I won't be here.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes?
I believe, and City Clerk Smith can correct me
if her understanding is different, that under the city's rules protocol, a council member who simply votes present or otherwise abstains on a matter that there has not been a disqualifying interest, a mandatory recusal under state law, is treated or is declared to have voted in the affirmative on the question. I think that is the outcome of the city's rule construct on that point.
Okay. We had a vote with seven council members here. Please let the record show that council member Gamble left at approximately 10:31, about 60 seconds ago. So where are we? We had...
Can you please show the opposing vote?
Right.
5-2.
It was 5-2.
It has to be 5-2. No matter what he did, it's 5-2.
Okay. So Councilmember Hanford voted in opposition to the motion. Councilmember Davis voted in opposition to the motion. That leaves Councilmembers Cutaback, Rasmussen, Camp, and Scarborough voting in the affirmative. And Councilmember Gamble was here at the time that the vote occurred. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And therefore, it becomes a vote in the affirmative mm-hmm. to the motion. Therefore, the vote is 5-2. Okay, is that correct, Mr. Attorney? Well,
that's my understanding and following your logic, which okay. I concur with.
All right, and if Councilmember Gamble were not considered, you would still have a vote of 4-2 had he left before the vote occurred. Okay. In which case, in either case, the motion would have passed. All right. Councilmember Camp.
I move that we adjourn.
Okay. We have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Camp, a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening. We're adjourned.
Have a good night, gentlemen.
Keep on.
Oh, that's